Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island, pairing beer and music since 1988. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago, Illinois. Listen critically, enjoy responsibly.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and later in the show, we're going to chat with journalist Mark Benelli. His recent piece for the New York Times Magazine details the rising prominence of these hologram tours featuring performances by deceased musicians. But first, we've got some answers to your questions.
Yeah, Greg, you know, we often get questions from listeners and friends about a variety of topics, ranging from our personal musical tastes to our experience as critics to how the hell could you be so wrong? So often, you name it, we get these questions. And we don't often get a chance to answer them. Yep. We rarely answer them on the show. So, Greg, we're going to hear from some of our listeners who got to read their questions, and the others are going to be fielded by our producers. But let's start with a listener.
Hi, my name is Steve. I'm calling from Logan Square. And my question is, what do Jim and Greg listen to when they're, quote, unquote, off duty, and in what formats?
Well, that is a good question because we do listen to so much music that is work-related. It's funny that a hobby turns into work, right, and vice versa. And it's joyful work, I must add. But it's always nice for me to be able to, when I have nothing work-related to listen to at that moment or want to just play some music for we have friends over or whatever, I'll go to my jazz collection. Mm. I especially love Thelonious Monk's Blue Note Sessions as sort of a closing epitaph for the day, you know? When I'm ready to wind down, I put on some Thelonious Monk. He just makes me happy. And I just think he's such an idiosyncratic, wonderful artist. And I would say the same about Ornette Coleman. Mm. So those are my kind of two go-tos when I want to listen to something just for the pure joy of it.
See, I've made this joke before. I just figure when I grow up and retire, then I will begin to dig deeper into jazz beyond my Coltrane box set and the occasional Mingus. You know, Steve, I would say I go to vinyl, right? When I am done listening to everything. This usually happens right around the holidays, right? I go back to everything I've been listening to all year, some of which we've reviewed on the show and some of which we haven't. I've got the running list. I'm trying to figure out my best of whatever year. Then we're done with that because we're taped by Christmas. And then I start cooking, right? And the whole time I'm cooking for the holidays, I'm listening to vinyl albums that I just love, that I would feel guilty listening to any other time of the year because I should be listening to new music, right? So this is when I go back to the Neil Young or the Wire or the Velvet Underground. Often I've bought them on vinyl. I'm revisiting how great they sound on vinyl.
Hi, my name is John McCormick, and my question for you two professional music critics is, how's your hearing? And what do you do to protect it? I said, how's your hearing?
I'm glad John made that joke because I was going to say, like, what? Years ago, I went to see the audiologist down at Northwestern, which is our health system, and had my hearing checked. And I had high-end hearing loss. And I invested in a great set of musicians' earplugs. That's actually the name, developed by some audiologists in Chicago for the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. What's great about it is these plugs is they lower the volume level without cutting any frequency. Mm-hmm. So you get the full spectrum of live music, or in my case, when I primarily wear them is when I'm sitting behind the drums.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, those cymbals.
Oh, those monitors too, right?
Those cymbals.
Blasting that back at you?
Look, I don't even have anything to monitor. Yeah. I let the boys' amps on stage with my band carry the volume.
Yeah.
But I rarely have needed them at concerts. I've found that with certain exceptions, like My Bloody Valentine, certainly not live festivals. The volume is never that bad. So I always have them in my pocket at a concert. Don't always wear them. Always wear them when I play the drums. And I don't think my hearing has eroded too badly. I'm probably overdue to go back.
Yeah. It's funny you should bring up My Bloody Valentine because I do remember at least on their last swing through town, they passed out earplugs at the door. And they may have done that back in the early 90s when I saw them for the first time. I think they needed to do it back then.
In 1991, they did not do it.
And I have to say, do not use me as a role model for how to handle your hearing at concerts, because I was of the mind that, you know, I'm never going to die. I'm never going to lose my hearing. I'm going to, you know, be young and vital forever. And, you know, I also like the physicality of that sound, you know, going through me and knocking me back. I love that sort of feel of the music being a physical, you know, making a physical impression on me, as well as a, you know, something that my brain could, you know, chew on. But later on, like you, you know, checked it, had the hearing checked, high-end hearing loss, started wearing earplugs. The earplug, the technology has improved so much in terms of just being able to get
it. It's phenomenal, and it's coming out of Chicago.
And without losing that sort of visceral appeal.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't do this at home, kids. Get earplugs and save your hearing.
It's not reversible. You can't get it back.
No, exactly.
We're going to turn now to our tallest producer, Mr. Andrew Gill.
Okay, Jim and Greg, these are not my questions. I have no questions for you. I know everything about you that I want to know. But so we have a question from Janet, who is actually a coworker here at WBEZ, and she wants to know, who is your favorite musician or band, and how do they inspire you?
Well, I'll have to go to the Velvet Underground.
Up to Lexington, 125, feel sick and dirty, more dead than
I got a chair in my office that's called the Velvet Underground chair. My wife had an artist paint one. It's a beautiful piece of art. You can actually see it. If you care to look at my website, there's a picture of it on there.
Is it not somewhat disrespectful to sit on the Velvet?
Well, only special people get to sit on the banana. That's all I can say.
You
know, Andy Warhol's banana is the... But then there's Lou Reed's lyrics around it. I have to say, they hit me. The Live 69 record came out right around the time that I was starting to become aware that there was music besides what you heard on AM pop radio. And it was an eye-opener for me as a young person. And then finally going back and discovering their first four studio albums, which were not available at the time. It was really difficult to find those records because they had gone out of print. Eventually, I tracked them all down and... I think, to me, coming from being a voracious reader as a young person and a writer who aspired to be a writer, I think the level of Lou Reed's lyrics, and combined with the mix of melody and noise in the music, struck something in me. This is different. This is something that you need to investigate more deeply. Pop music can speak to you in a way that you didn't think was possible. And I think it set me on the path toward discovering music of a similar ilk. I mean, those first four Velvet's records to me hold the key to just about every piece of music that I've loved ever since.
As the great critic Lester Bangs said, the roots of all modern music come from the Velvet Underground. Obviously, the Velvet's, I can trump your chair. I've got the banana on my left arm.
Good.
All right.
Tattooed there.
We know and love Janet. Janet is the longtime receptionist here at BEZ. I think she was the first person we met at BEZ, Greg.
That is true.
743 weeks ago before we came in here to begin doing this show. Janet, you know I can't just choose one. I will tell you that illustrated on my two arms are Wire, The Flaming Lips, Savages, Husker Du, The 13th Floor Elevators, Can, Brian Eno, Nirvana, The Velvets, The Feelies, Pink Floyd, The Rolling Stones, Lester Bangs, Funkadelic, The Ramones, Noi! With the exclamation point. De La Soul, The Beatles, Public Enemy. The music that, for me, represents best the creativity, the lust for life, the explosion of personality, of the best of everything I love in popular music, and also that hit me at a particular time and place. So it's as much when I look at this these illustrated arms, the illustrated man, I'm reminded of the music I love and the things I value, but where I was at those places and times.
No, wait a minute. You got, what, 10, 12 bands there, and I only got one?
When you love a band enough and are going to go out on that limb to carry it for life in ink on your body. I think what Janet's really asking is, what do the two of us value most in the music that we will go to the mat for, that we will let define us for our lives and our critical careers?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Janet gets at the heart of what we do, why we do it. To me, it's like you want to be dashed against the rocks. You want to have your life changed. I mean, people talk about, you know, there's the Lou Reed lyric, you know, my life was saved by rock and roll. It seems like hyperbole. It seems like that's overstatement to the max. But no, it really does change your life, and it makes you a more, you know, open person to new ideas and new art and the possibility
differences
of what human beings can do. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's about transcending. It's about transcending the everyday. Every single time you hear a piece of music, which is an extraordinary thing, you know, to get from a little shiny plastic disc or the machine on which you stream or, you know, vinyl record. Every single time I leave this body and this earth and go somewhere inspiring that makes me happy to be alive. That was my fanzine when I was a kid. Reasons for Living.
Right.
That's great.
All right, now producer Ayanna is going to ask a question. Ayanna, what do you got?
This one's from Catherine V. Cassidy. She says, what would you tell a kid who thinks they want to be a music critic? What does it take? The ups and downs of the job. How have things changed since you started?
Go back. Don't do it.
Run away.
Like as fast as you can.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Run away. You know, this question comes from Catherine only days after you walked out of the Chicago Tribune for the last time after 40 years, 30 of those as the pop music critic. I think, Greg, there are not that many jobs anymore in any field. Classical music, pop music, movie critic. You know, Chicago right now does not have a full-time television critic at any of the papers. And television is having this renaissance, artistic renaissance. I'm sad to say that the need for great criticism is more than ever because there is so much that we all have access to in the little device in our pockets.
Right.
Every film, every piece of visual art, every piece of music, right?
More music available to more human beings than any time in human history.
Which is a brilliant and wonderful thing. How do you know where to start?
Mm.
You know, trusted curators. And who, besides your friends, you know, is more reliable than a critic who you read and come to admire her opinions and her view of the art form? That having been said, in the same way that my colleagues at Columbia College who teach poetry classes of aspiring poets, right? Or you know, I don't think any of those kids are expecting to graduate and get a job as a poet.
Right.
Right. You know, 99.9% of indie bands, indie hip-hop acts or electronic artists or rock bands don't expect to make a living from it. They make it because they can just make this music just as they can't imagine not eating or breathing.
Right.
And that's what I think people who love to write about art, whether they want to review movies or music, are facing a future where you're going to work as a barista somewhere and you're going to write because you love to write.
It's the passion. You know, the only reason to do it is because you love it. You can't think, as you said, of doing anything else more passionately. And that's a good reason to do it.
Yeah.
There's nothing stopping you from posting your reviews of anything online. At the same time, don't expect to make a living out of it. To me, it's like, you know, starting a band or any creative endeavor. Don't expect anybody else to like it. But if you love doing it, keep at it.
That's what makes life worth living.
Yeah, it's one thing to start. It's another thing to sustain it. But if you're – I always have this kind of – maybe it's misplaced, you know, hope and belief that if you're really good at something, sooner or later – other people are going to appreciate that.
Yeah.
The key is to keep going and doing it and getting better at it.
I've been teaching reviewing the arts and cultural criticism in the arts for 11 years, and I will say that I have a half dozen of what I've considered the best students who began getting paid to do criticism, movies or music criticism within a year like of graduating college. So, you know, it does happen. But, you know, if you want to bank on that, you might want to have a better chance at banking at winning the lottery.
Let's go to our producer, Alex Claiborne, who has a listener question for us.
We have a question from Jesse Ives, and he is wondering, what is the best venue bathroom you have ever needed to use, and what is the worst?
Kind of, I don't want to think about some of this stuff, you know?
No.
This in particular.
Yeah, I mean, because look, you know, I am an aficionado of the dive rock clubs, the punk rock clubs. I have closed more clubs playing and visiting as a fan than most people could ever visit in a lifetime. And then you have those clubs that like don't have doors on the stalls and the urinals backed up, and you know. And look, I grew up going to CBGB, you know, hardcore matinees and sneaking in underage.
Yeah,
and CBGB's infamous basement bathroom, but I don't think anything's worse. I don't think anything in the universe could be worse than the porta potties at a Lollapalooza.
Well, the worst ones were the ones at Woodstock in '94. Let me tell you, you want to
because they
about
overflowing because of the the rain,
unbelievable.
There were little rivers of defecant.
So the thing, and to me, the nightmare about CBGB is not only was it a terrible bathroom, but you had to cross in front of the stage, so everybody audience and the band
knew you
could
were
see
going
that
to
you
bathroom.
Were going to the bathroom. Yeah. And then if you took, you know, extra time, you know, it was just like it was embarrassing. You know, it was embarrassing. It was like a walk of shame or something.
On the other hand, before the gentrification that brought boutiques to the Lower East Side, you could just go outside and use the street.
True.
At CBGB, he's asking about the best. I mean, it's like
I don't know. Is it, you know, first place tie for last or something? I don't know.
Any place that's clean.
Yeah. Well, at Park West, they had a guy in the...
Oh, yeah.
A gentleman who was handing out towels to you when to
Park
wash
West
your hands.
Is a fascinating theater in Chicago.
This is in Chicago,
dates back to the Capone era, and they have a gentleman who they don't actually hire. He just shows up, and, you know, you tip him, and then he hands you a towel, and he has, like, lifesavers and a toothbrush, mouthwash.
And I would say the House of Blues, you know, you can say what you want about the, you know, quality of music there, and but in terms of the bathrooms, pretty good. I mean, for a franchise, they actually do a pretty nice job of keeping those places relatively.
That's like saying the burgers at Hard Rock Cafe are good.
Hey, I'm trying to say something nice about rock venue bathrooms. That wraps up this edition of Ask the Critics. And as always, we want to hear from you. What questions you have for us, give us a call at 888-859-1800. Coming up, it's The Ghosts of Artists Past, The Rise of the Hologram Tour. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.